Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hello, Podcats. It's me. How are you? I'm sat here with Jesse. Do you want to say hi, Jesse?
Hi.
Do you know what I'm doing?
No.
I'm recording the introduction to my podcast. do you know what I do a podcast about?
No.
No. You're not really the demographic. It's basically other working mums. And this week I spoke to Laura Brand, who released a book after she had our first of her 2 little girls called The Joy Journal, which is all kind of lovely ideas of simple things you can do with your small people to keep them entertained, keep you feeling the right side of things. I guess it's a little bit of mindfulness, a bit of crafting, a bit of play, a bit of imagination, a bit of, ideas for creativity. But also it got me thinking a lot about joy and the importance of that, because I think about that word a lot. And especially over the last 16 months, it's a word I've used tons and tons, because joy is something that sort of elevates you in quite a light-hearted, resonant way. It's not quite the same as happiness, I don't think, joy. It's a slightly more, got a little bit more lightness of touch, really. And for me, joy has been the thing I have always sought out, even if it's in a very small form, just to give my brain a place to go. So for me, joy might be, I don't know, the reaction I get when I stare at the sequins as they catch the light, or playing on the trampoline for a minute, or making something, or dancing a certain way to a song I love, or doing my Lego, or deciding that actually tonight's going to be cocktail night, because why not? Or speaking to a friend, or hearing some good news. What do you think brings you joy, Jesse? What makes you feel like that? Feel joyful?
Can you think?
Fun? Yeah, exactly. Fun's joyful. I agree with that. Did you just break Mickey's bed? Don't worry, it's propped up with books anyway. That's the sort of thing. Actually, Jesse and I did something today that brought us a bit of joy. We spent ages making something, didn't we, Jess? There's a game online called Friday Night Funkin'. And it's basically a bit like a dance mat type game.
No, it's not a dance, like microphone.
I know it's a microphone game, but if people haven't seen it, Jesse, it's got arrows that go across the screen, and you have to hit your keyboard at the same time as the button, the arrows go, and it makes the singer, your singer, who's having a rap battle, sing a note. And Jesse wanted to create a sort of 3D version of this, so we made a tiny little stage with tiny little characters. And that brought us some joy, didn't it, Jess? We enjoyed that. I should probably say I didn't have Laura for very long, which was a bit frustrating because I love longer chats. But she was very lovely, but it turns out she's got... Hold on, sweet pea. Oh, that looks nice, little scarf. Jesse just made a scarf out of my dressing gown cord. Actually, you know what? You've put that around your neck a few too many times. I don't really like that. Thank you. Don't be careful
what
your neck. I'll tell you after I've finished this. But yeah, it turns out she's got loads of animals and one of them went very well. Anyway, probably didn't need to know that, did you? Okay, cool. I'll see you on the other side. Bye-bye! It's quite funny, actually, because when I was... before I always speak to, you know, people for the podcast, I always look up stuff and, you know, try and get more of an overview than what I knew before.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you know this already, but there's your name with all the lovely Joy Journal, and then the other Laura brand speaks to serial killers.
Oh my god.
Do you know this?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it literally goes from sort of your own soap to talking to people on death row.
Oh my god.
it's quite a satisfying contrast.
Wow, I think I'm going to be googling my own name later, which I said not to do, but I must say, like, that's probably why I didn't know. Has she got a podcast on serial killers? Because if that, or is it
no podcast, but she does, that's what she does. She goes and interviews people and talks to people on death row
and
serial killers is so it's not quite
that is crazy. Do you know what, it's like that could be, I mean, I wouldn't say no to exploring that avenue if I had to fill her boots for a minute, but it's definitely different from from squishy soap and ladybirds.
I know, it's brilliant. like we're clicking through on articles. Oh no, definitely that's not her.
No, not that one. But, oh god, that's funny.
I know, it was really making me giggle. But actually, your book, The Joy Journal, is something I've been using anyway. I think it's so lovely. And there's a few things I really like about it. One thing is the realistic timeframes you give how long kids are generally engaged with what they're up to. Because I think sometimes with those things, they can say, oh, your kids will enjoy playing with, I don't know, making bubble pictures for hours.
Yeah.
And actually 15 minutes is probably more like it.
Yes, or two.
Yes. But also I think the really crucial thing is that it's all about managing your expectation of what it is that you're going to be doing and the outcome that will happen. So if you think, oh, we'll have this idyllic, I don't know, morning playing in the garden doing one thing and it turns into something else, just sort of going with the flow, really.
Totally. I mean, like, one of the things I think that probably we all in motherhood have to deal with, well, maybe we don't. I think I'm sometimes only just learning now about the expectation versus reality. And so I did explore that a little bit with doing the crafts. So when I wrote the book, I had a two-year-old and a newborn baby. So Mabel's my oldest. She's now 4.5. And Peggy's just 3. And it was all... I was just like winging it all and doing it. It took so long to do because it really depended on their mood. Like, I would set up a craft or an activity to do. And I had it's not pressure because I have a wonderful, very unpressurizing publisher, but it was very much like, oh, I have to get this one done because I want this to go in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mabel would have a completely different idea. And in the book, I write in one particular example was that we did a family clay activity, air dry clay. And my husband and I sat down really excited to sort of get into doing little pinch pots and pressing flowers into them, making patterns. And our daughter just picked up the clay and just chucked it against the wall. And we were in a rental house at the time. And I was like picking clay off the rental house wall. And I was like, oh no, this is a disaster. We tried again the next day and we ended up doing a slightly different craft. And that was the craft that ended up in the book. But I put the whole story in because I think it's really things just, we have to accept that the kids are in a flow state. So, and they're very present. So if something changes in an instant, it can be just like they hear something or the weather changes and they're off doing another thing.
Yeah.
And I do think that the acceptance of that's quite hard because we've all been living our lives a slightly different way. We're probably quite creatures of, well, we've been probably, we're, maybe through our own experiences in school and things like that, we've kind of, we're willing to see tasks out probably in some cases beyond the point that we should. So like, yeah, maybe if we learned, I sort of try to take their example, followed by their example sometimes by just going with whatever it is the next thing that's coming up. And,
yeah,
you know, so yeah, it's an interesting one kind of, but I wanted to include timeframes because I felt like it's basically what all parents want to know about anyway. Well, how long is it going to take me? Yeah. What's the mess going to be like? Am I going to enjoy it? Because if I'm not going to enjoy it, and if it's going to be stressful and messy and long, I'm not going to do it, basically.
Yeah, yeah, it's very true. And I mean, that's very, very little bubbers to have when you're writing a book.
Yes.
How do you look back on that time in your life when you had, I mean, obviously they're still very little, but particularly having that newborn and a toddler?
I mean, I don't know really, Sophie. It was sort of such a blur because we were also traveling. So we were in, for half that time, we were actually in America.
And oh, wow. I didn't
realize
that.
So it was, yeah. So I think I wrote half that book actually in Los Angeles. And like, it was all very new for me, kind of writing it and sending bits to my, you know, to my publisher, and sort of also the feelings of, it was the first thing I had ever done that was almost like a baby, but like a book baby, if you will. And I was very worried about how it would be received, very worried about every time I sent a chapter off, I was like, you know, so I learned a lot about myself through writing it. And also, it was sort of, yes, there was a lot of juggling and it stopped and started a lot and it took me quite a long time. So, I mean, it was just, I was glad when it came out. I must say, I obviously wrote it. I never intended for it to be brought out in a time when everyone suddenly was in their homes. It was like the release date was April the 16th. And
wow.
And I handed it in obviously 6 months or maybe before, maybe 6 months before that, I had seen the first copy I sent it back. So when it was like suddenly COVID happened and lockdown, I was like, I don't even know. Should I even be, it seems somehow opportunistic or it seems like, but it was always my intention for this to be for people to do at home when they were bored and with their kids and how to find new bonding experiences.
Yeah, so, that's so funny. I suppose I didn't really think about it because I think I became aware of it as the first lockdown was sort of progressing. So I didn't, I don't think I realised that it would have, yeah, conception would have been so much earlier really, because suddenly the focus from lots of different areas was about, okay, we're all here and we're doing this now. And right, how do we make this feel like we're actually getting through it and not going crazy?
Exactly.
Not going crazy.
No.
and how, I suppose it's, I wonder, I mean, you said yourself, no, not pressure from your publisher, but just a sort of internal pressure. But if you're doing something that's very focused on joy, there's lots of aspects about certainly new motherhood where, I don't know about you, but I don't necessarily always, didn't always feel like I was completely riding that wave. Does it come with its own pressure sometimes, that's what you're writing about?
Yes, yes, it really does. And like, to be honest with you, partly I felt like it had become a slight mantra to keep me on track because I would fall off the joy path often, you know, like, my intention when writing it was to write a book that was like sort of a bit traditional, a bit like the stuff we used to do, a little bit stuff that maybe we'd do with our mums or our grandparents, but also trying to find something within ourselves that would spark. So in the moment of like easy play-doh, there's a bit of playfulness between the two of us, and it's not just goal-based. So it's not just like, oh, can you do this thing to my child, you know? It's not on the end result, it's on the process more than anything. And if I wasn't in the right mood, I would be so caught up in just the urgency of doing it and just wanting to, and actually only in letting go, which is really hard, of any end point, only in letting and being present is the moment, really is the truthful moments of joy. And
yeah.
And actually it can happen to us. I mean, I think that it's a funny thing, isn't it, joy? There's a difference between joy and happiness, in that happiness is meant to, you know, be quite kind of an instant thing and quite kind of sparky, and joy is meant to, is more comforting all round feeling of sort of, like a joyful feeling. Yeah. And so, and actually I do try to keep joy in my, as a sort of daily mantra almost, because yeah. I think it is so hard when you're feeling tired or stressed or when you've got a lot going on. And actually the title of your podcast and I believe your autobiography, Spinning Plates, is the perfect, I think joy can be lost a lot when you've got so many different things going on that you just want to cross things off. You want to just go, right, okay, you're fed, the dogs are fed, you guys are happy, okay, I'm going to quickly run and do this, or I'm going to write a book, because I know you've been writing a book as well, and you've got five children, and I just can't, I mean, I don't know, you should be offering advice to the many, because I honestly can't believe, like, I myself am also writing another book at the moment, and I saw on your Instagram, you'd posted a picture of yourself writing from your bed, and then you'd said part of it was written at your kid's chair in yeah. his room. And I feel like the same. I feel like I've been writing this book in the last few months, and I've been doing it in the weirdest places and positions with the weirdest sort of conditions around me. And, you know, you can sort of get into a rhythm with it, and joy can be found in there.
But definitely.
It's a nice affirmation for yourself to seek joy, like a nice idea, you know.
Definitely.
Could you, on this walk where we're all stressed because it's raining and we're all a bit grumpy and we all want to be home really drinking tea and watching TV, is there anything in this moment when we're, you know, is there any joy for us to seek? And, you know, that kind of example happens a lot. We're often on a walk, and it rains and the kids start crying and we all want to be at home. And actually you can sort of you have to just re-channel your mindset. And I think that is quite hard. And I think we people need support in that. I think you need other people's encouragement. And I think you need some things for yourself in there, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I also think there's maybe, I totally agree with your description of what joy is about and that warm hug of it. And I think we've maybe got a little bit better at giving joy a proper space, actually, because it's a word I use a lot, because it's almost like the tonic that kind of makes
yes.
like all those joints, keeps them oiled, really.
That's amazing, yeah.
And I think finding it out in little drips and drabs, to me, that's like the difference between feeling calibrated and not.
Yes,
even
totally.
If it's a text from a friend, you know, something on the wall that you just like to look at, 5 minutes doing something that just gives you that little headspace, all that stuff. It's sort of there's something quite sort of wholesome and simple about it, but it's kind yeah. of been elevated recently, because I think we've all realised that actually those casual things, they count for quite a lot, particularly when, I think that was the thing I struggled with the most at the beginning of lockdown, actually, was that a lot of casual stuff was taken away. You know, just popping out to go and get a coffee, like even the walk to and from the coffee place, that was part of that. You know, if one of my small people came with me, well, so much the better. But it was all tiny little moments, really. And trying to find those bits again has been really crucial. What's your new book about?
So it's in the world of the Joy Journal, but this time it's for grown-ups. This one is of the same nature in terms of crafting and making. But I decided to write this one for adults. So it's been, to be honest, I don't know if I'm a worse sort of guinea pig than my children, because it's me and my friends doing these things, or like on Zoom or whatever. And, but I really hope, like, I'm not there yet with finishing it, and I really love doing it. And actually, like, I do actually incidentally get a lot of joy from writing it.
Yeah, I bet.
But again, it's some trial and error, and you have to go through a lot of crafts and experiments and work out which ones are going to be included and which ones were a complete disaster and you should never look at again. So there's quite a lot to it, but I really want it to be something that, I think what happened, the inspiration, I always sort of intended to write one at some point, but I didn't really know when. And then when a lot of the parents were writing me lovely messages, maybe on Instagram or whatever, saying, oh, my kids really enjoyed squishy soap, but weirdly, I think I enjoyed it more than them even, you know, like it made me go into a playful, it made me go into a sort of playful mindset for the first time in ages. And actually, That was the thing I wanted to sort of hone in on, you know. I wanted to go, right, okay, so parents were sort of enjoying some of these things. I enjoy some of these things. Is there a way of making it an accessible, I wanted to do like a craft, but that's sort of accessible and inviting for people, even if you aren't really an arty, crafty person. So it's got a real variety of stuff. And I'm excited. I bet, you know, I've just got to finish it first.
Yeah. And there's all this, this creativity and this sort of seeking out of these things. Is this something that's been part of your life all the way?
Actually, yeah. I mean, I was always very arty at sort of school, and I actually found it hard to concentrate in class, and I found lessons quite hard, but I did enjoy school on the whole, and I had some great friends, and I liked my teachers, and it was all good. But at the end of the day, I was most excited about doing sketchbook stuff in the art room with my friends and listening to the radio. You know, that was the sort of ultimate thing. And actually, I lost sight of that in my early 20s, and I didn't. So even when I had sort of jobs, I did various jobs, like a personal assistant, and I worked in hospitality, and I was a nanny for a bit. And one thing I did continue to do was I did the window decorations of a shop in London. So painted an amazing kids shop actually in Pimlico, and I used to paint the decorative displays for different seasons, so Halloween or Easter, and that was probably the only kind of creative thing I was doing. And it was once in a while, but I loved it. And I would be like, I'd mark it out in the diary, and it'd be like, I'm doing that. It felt so good. It made me do like a one day, you know, outside the shop, I'd get to chat to people doing a little bit of arty stuff. And I really enjoyed that. Whatever job I was doing, whether it was more admin based or not, I've always found a relaxation in creative activities, you know, and crafting. And then it wasn't until I actually was pregnant with Mabel that I got into doing creative stuff again after a few years of not, you know. When you're in hospitality, you are only in hospitality, you know, you're doing stock checks and you're managing a restaurant or a club. It was a restaurant club actually. And it was just all consuming. So there was no space for anything else. And then when I was pregnant, I really took that as downtime. And in the downtime, that's when I started going like, oh, I want to do something creative again. And I started customizing dungarees, painter's overalls, and it ended up becoming quite a big business that I actually couldn't keep up with.
Oh, wow.
And they were sort of painter's overalls with pockets, and I would customize them, so dye them to specification, customize with names or whatever. And the first person I ever gave a pair to was my best friend Fern Cotton. So she received a pair for her birthday with paintbrushes in the pouch. I think hers were pink with Fern written on them, stitched in, embroidered, and then paintbrushes. And she wore them, and someone saw them, and then that was it. And then everyone else wanted a pair. But I couldn't keep up with that. I was doing that until I was pregnant with my second daughter. So that was also alongside writing that first book. But I just, that was another little creative outlet.
Yeah. So did you think you were going to go back to hospitality when you were having your first baby?
I was going to do. I was absolutely adamant. Part of me was like always interested in sort of, I think that social aspect of being in a work environment that was sociable always appealed to me. Mm. And it still does now. So when I've done workshops with kids, Play-Doh, or was it Happy Place Festival or Port Elliot Festival, I really enjoyed the fusion of socializing and hosting, like, so doing the craft and then meeting the parents, and sort of that sort of appealed to me sometimes, actually more than actual socializing. Basically, like, I don't know if you maybe you're in a different mindset, but like when you're sort of doing an action, if you're teaching or if you're in your case maybe performing, I don't know if there's an element of that social aspect that you enjoy, or whether it's very much compartmentalized, your performance and your
social. It's totally dependent on the whole thing's very social. It's really interactive. Yeah. And I think I've actually always thought of gigs as a bit like a date.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah.
So you've got like the first 5 to 10 minutes where you're kind of getting the measure, really.
Yeah.
Like, are they very easy to please? Are they a bit more serious? Are they noisy? Are they quiet? Are they tentative? Are they boisterous? And then from there, like, my job is just to turn it into kind of date where they would want to come and see me again, basically.
Oh yeah, that is a really...
I get the second date. That's what I'm aiming for.
That is amazing. I love that. I've never heard of it described like that, but I can imagine. That's really, really amazing.
Yeah, well, it's all chemistry. You need the chemistry of the interaction. And actually, I think ultimately what you're saying about, you know, working with people and doing the workshops, it resonates with me because I think the heart of it is being quite a people person, really. And I enjoy feeding off the energy of whatever you get back from people when you're doing things with them, like performing or anything, actually. I just quite like being in amongst groups and figuring stuff out that way. It's fun.
Yeah, it is. And actually, one thing that interests me is coming together as adults, coming together to do something that's, in fact, I'm sort of writing about this specifically, gathering in community to do a craft or an act or something that, so you can have quite a laugh with that, because in a group, you're not all going to be good at the same thing. You're not going to all want to do the same thing. But if you try it, that I think that there can be a lot of like fun and joy found in trying something new. And if you do it in a group where you're all going into it as complete beginners, it is quite funny and it's quite like lifting for everybody, because community and that social aspect, and for me in that case craft, for you for performance, I think we can get a lot from that.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Do you think when you were... Because if craft is... It sounds like it's something that you've always really loved doing and sort of always seeked it out, but maybe it wasn't necessarily given such centre stage in your life up to now. Do you think that's because sometimes our view of those things has not always been given as much space in it? It's just like socially we've sort of shifted our view of the value of those things, I think.
Totally. I think it's a form... I think what I've discovered actually is that it's part of my self-care. You know, like it's actually I get... And I've been exploring that... relaxation, well, what it does, the mindfulness and relaxation that it brings for people. So there's a lot of research in working with your hands and how it affects the brain positively. So I think they use a lot of things like knitting circles, embroidery groups, mental health awareness groups. So people with mental health issues and things like that, they'll bring a craft where you work with your hands in order to become almost an exercise for finding calm and relaxation. Yeah. And I find that myself. And so, yeah, I've brought it into my own life as a form of looking after myself in a way. Yeah.
And is it something you do as a family? Is the sort of
yes, it is. So we do, like, although we have completely different idea of what like we're all like, I don't mind getting messy and doing messy stuff. My husband does not like that sort of aspect of it. So there was one in the book. There was an activity called moon sand, which was that sand that you can mold. There's another name for it.
When
you,
I know that
you
can, stuff.
Yeah, so moldable sand, I like it. Basically. I like it too, and I like playing with it and squishing it.
Yeah, it's really therapeutic. Whatever.
Exactly. So, but we made it, and my kids had spread it all over the kitchen, and my husband was just like freaking out, like not because of the mess, but because of that. He was just like, oh, the sort of the sandy aspects. He was like clenching his teeth, and I was just like,
nobody likes sand.
No one likes sand, really. Exactly. Lucky that, because none of us are going on holidays. No,
I know.
It's fine. We'll be seeking our own. We'll be seeking our own at home holidays.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's the sort of he didn't like that. So when we come together as craft, often it is pushing each other into an area we're not so comfortable with. So. But one thing we do together and both enjoy it mutually is clay stuff. So we like to do air dry clay date nights, for example. You know, and we make presents for friends and we do stuff together like that. And then with the kids, it's the most stuff we do together is mostly outdoors in nature. So we'll do we do a lot of map. We draw a lot of maps out. So our kids really love a map and a treasure hunt. And I'm not talking about treasure hunt where we actually buy treasure, more like a scavenger hunt where we're looking for a particular thing on a walk, and we do a little map of maybe the walk we're going to go on. And, you know, or even if it's around the house on a rainy day, we've done things like that, even if it's just in the kitchen, or, you know, we'll scavenger hunts and that sort of activity, which is a little bit of movement, a little bit of play. They're the sort of activities we tend to do as a family, and it always brings us out of our funks. If we're in a bit, if one of us is feeling a bit stuck and a bit moody and a bit sulky, or wants to just hang out and do nothing, usually something like that brings a little bit of energy. So yeah, movementy things and always getting outside always helps us as a family.
Yeah, I suppose it's good to know those tricks, especially when you've got a young family, because getting it out and about is, well, kids love it anyway, actually. Even when they say they don't want to, they always get totally lost in it when they're out and about, which
they
I really
love.
And actually we all do, actually. I surprised myself, really, because I never thought of myself as particularly outdoorsy. But when we all go out, we can stay out for hours and hours, and the kids all invent this whole imaginary world in their heads. But I did actually want
that. That's amazing.
Is it right that you and your husband, you dated years ago and then got back together?
Yes, that's right.
I always think that's really romantic.
Yeah, so we dated like 15 years ago. And then maybe more. My gosh, I can't remember exactly. 15 years ago, we were saying the other day. But and then we went our own ways, lived our own lives for a bit. And then incidentally, we... So I have told this story before, but I was coming out of a relationship with somebody. We lived together and we'd been together for quite a while. And the day that my ex-boyfriend, he left where we were living, I was feeling not so good and a little bit heartbroken. And my friend who lives in East London said to me, you need to come out for a walk, like you can't stay in. And I was crying and, you know, oh God, you know, this is not what I did expect it, but you know what I mean? Heartbreak, basically.
Yes.
And my friend said, let's go out. And she said, meet me on the top of the canal in East London, just off the top in Shoreditch. Meet me on the top, out off the bus or whatever. So I got off the bus and met her. We came down the stairs and I hadn't seen Russell for years. And he was at the bottom of the stairs, like just under the bridge, like about, you know, a few meters away. And I didn't do anything. I said, oh my God, this is weird. Like, to my friend, and my friend and I started crying. And my friend was like, I'm not sure today's the day to go and see him. And I was like, I think I have to. And I remember going like this. I sort of went, Russell. And he didn't hear because he was like too far ahead. And my friend went, no, okay, grab a hold of yourself. right, this is not, it's not for today. And I was like, okay, fine. But I did sort of send a message and say, like, I think I just saw you, and like, so weird because I'm going through this thing, and of all the people to bump into, or at least see, on a part of the canal that I've never been on in my life, it would be you. It's crazy.
Yeah.
And that was the sort of, you know, and it wasn't like suddenly then we met up or anything. We sort of just chatted for a bit. And, you know, years and years have gone past. You've got so much to talk about. And you're a different person. You know, I was like 19 when we met, and you know, you really form into a completely different person through your 20s. And
definitely,
but it was a very sort of happy meeting. Where you know, it's amazing, really.
Well, it's
wonderful.
Yeah. Well, I mean, changes everything, doesn't it? And I think there's so much serendipity in that. And funnily enough, you're not the first person I've spoken to where they've gone out and then had a bit where they've both lived their lives and then got back together.
Yeah.
But I think it's, I always find it quite interesting that I did, because, you know, saying you go through the, you know, you change so much in your 20s. So if you went back to the 15 years ago, do you think the idea that then now that's who you, you know, your family, and it's so defining for both of you?
Gosh, do you know what? Part of me, I think, like, part of the sort of, like, I, you know, not to sound really soppy, but I really, really loved him. So, like, I think would have just said, like, let's have a family at the time. I would have been ill prepared, Sophie, let me tell you, because family, I don't think I would have been ready for a family in my early 20s. But I really loved him. So it was sort of like, I think I always had an idea, like, in my mind. And then, of course, when you are not together anymore and you have your own lives that are very different, then, you know, you just get over it. So then to sort of come back to a situation where it's like, my good, we really literally had that chat where we were like, wow, okay, well, I never thought I'd be sitting opposite you again talking the way I'm talking, you know, like, this is what I've been doing this and this, and you've been doing that and that, and da, da, da. And we just talked for, like, over the course of weeks and then months, and just chatting and hanging out and just getting to know each other again, because then you, and then it just became so apparent that, you know, we really feel like soulmates. So it's just, you know, it's just like, oh wow, you know, that feeling of just knowing each other so much that, you know, it feels like a home.
Yeah.
And that felt like it, you know, for us.
Yeah. Well, I can hear that. And actually, funny enough, I saw a clip of Russell being interviewed on, I think, on Loose Women, of all places.
Yeah.
He had Katie Price to one side. It's not quite incongruous, but he was talking really lovingly about family life and how, you know, much it's, you know, completely turned his life around. And I thought, whilst a lot of people wouldn't know what it feels like to date someone who's in the public eye, I think there are lots of people who end up with somebody where maybe people think that they know from the outside what that person's like, but actually when it's you two together and your family life, it's something that's very private and very different. And I was thinking there must be a lot of people that have been on a similar trajectory, actually, and maybe met up when they were young and then thought, right, this is not going to work now, and then kind of met up later on. It's just a lovely, serendipity to the whole thing.
It really is. And that serendipity, sort of like in itself, is a very beautiful word, isn't it? I like that word. I've always liked it. And
sort of like too.
The idea of it is like, it is sort of romantic and beautiful, and it's seeing beauty in the unexpected, but also how the paths can cross in such a beautiful, it's a magical moment. It's a magical moment. And so, like, crossing paths is something like that.
Definitely.
I imagine there are lots of people, like you say, that have that. And I'm really glad that we've lived our own lives as well, by the way. It's so nice that we've had these different sort of lives and that we were able to come together and have a family and feel like we've experienced what we were meant to, or potentially, you know, what we're meant to experience for ourselves.
Yeah, definitely.
In a way.
And it's also a good lesson for your daughters as well, because I think it all sort of taps into kind of the ideas of the joy you were talking about before, and being able to just check in with yourself, that as they grow up, they'll have this great example in their own parents of, you know, how the threads can cross and then cross back again.
Yeah.
It's like a lovely story for them. So,
yeah. Oh, you know, lovely.
Because there'll be one day where they might really fall for someone and then it ends up not working out. And then you'd be like, well, you know, if it's meant to be, it'll be.
Yeah, exactly. Then we can tell our story.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank when you think ahead, I mean, I suppose when you're so, because a lot of the things we've been talking about the stuff that you've been doing home and crafting and stuff, is that something you can sort of sometimes see into the future? Because your little girls, they're very close together in age, aren't they?
Yeah, 18 months.
That's a tiny, tiny gap. Can you remember that bit? I mean, so during that time, that's when you were doing all the embroidery and...
yeah, I mean, sewing. I will tell you this. When I was pregnant I had suffered terribly with hyperemesis with both children. So I was sick. Basically,
that's the very severe.
Yeah, so I ended up in hospital with both pregnancies.
Oh, no, I didn't realise that.
Yes, horrendous.
Poor thing. That's awful.
Yeah, and it can be quite, it's funny because it's just not even morning sickness. It's just so much more than that. And I really, really, when someone tells me that they're suffering with morning sickness, I'm really already really sympathetic. And then when I understand that it might be more serious, like hyperemesis, and it's just a constant sickness where they can't function, I can't tell you how much I want to tell them it's all going to be okay, but I really understand how you feel, and it feels just dreadful at the time. So yeah, I did have these you know, it was a shock to the system with Mabel, because I didn't know. My mum suffered with extreme sickness, and so when it happened to me, I just thought, oh gosh, oh no, okay, I've heard about this isn't good. But it was like, you know, debilitating, and I didn't do much, but I did carry on doing the dungarees for a bit. We took Mabel on our honeymoon. She was 10 months old, and we got home, and maybe it was a couple of weeks after we got home from our honeymoon, I sort of smelt perfume and I vomited, and I was like, oh my God, hold on a minute. Mabel was 11 and a half months, like just coming up to her first birthday. And I literally was like, oh no, oh no. I know what this means. I was like, oh, okay. Blimey.
That's like in the movies.
It really is. It really is. And it's always, weirdly for me, it was always kind of anything, like actually any smells at all. Yeah. But it was funny. The first thing, it was like maybe someone's aftershave or something. And I was like, oh no, that's it. I knew immediately. And I had already taken on a big job making, doing dungarees for the cast of Mamma Mia.
Oh, wow.
Mamma Mia 2. So,
that's a lot of dungaree orders, yeah, right there.
imagine I was stitching the name Meryl, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
And Cher, if you can believe it.
That's fantastic.
But I was also being sick at the same time.
Not so fantastic.
I remember really not being able to completely embrace what that is. Like, I'm a massive ABBA fan. I'm a massive Meryl Streep fan. So when I was asked by a friend to make these for the cast, I just was so unwell. I couldn't fully appreciate it, but I did it. I made them all and I dropped them off at the studios. And I believe I did manage to give Lily James hers in person, and she put them on, and I was very happy with that before I went and ran into the toilet.
Oh.
But so that was the sort of, I decided that should be the last job I did. So I went out with a bang with the dungarees, but I must say, I just sort of stopped doing that at the time, because then I was just pregnant and I had I had Mabel, with 1.5-year-old, and I was pregnant, and it was just not what I was expecting. But obviously, I'm thrilled about it, because they're really beautiful children and they're really different. But 18 months apart doesn't seem really a big deal now. At the time, I think the bit I was most worried about was having a newborn baby with Mabel being only sort of approaching 2.
Yeah.
I sort of couldn't believe that that was going to happen. And I was worried about whether she would be accepting of it, and whether I had mum guilt over it all, to be honest. I was just, you know, what's this going to be like? And actually, we couldn't have been luckier with how it went, because they're beautiful little girls who love each other. They fight, but they love each other.
I feel like in sort of bygone eras, that was much more fashionable, actually, like having close together gaps.
Yeah.
Really much more the norm.
What's your closest gap, Sophie?
3 years.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. So you've had 3 years recuperation.
Yeah, that's how I've always done it. Like the last four are all 3 years apart from each other. It goes like 3 years, boom, 3 years, boom. So now my little one, he's 2.5 and I'm like, this is a weird time because normally there'd be another one sort of in the peripheral vision. And I'm like, you know, I think 5 years feels like a lot now.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, to be honest, I just wanted to ask you, actually, if you have did you have easy pregnancies?
It got easier. The first one was terrible. I had my first two quite early. They were both born a couple of months early.
Right. Oh, so that comes with its own complications and
I wasn't very good at
stresses on
it.
You.
Yeah, I had something called preeclampsia and
oh, of course. Yeah,
puffed up and... Yeah, but then I got sort of better at it, I feel like, maybe. And then towards the end when I had the like chubby ones I took straight home, I just loved it.
Oh gosh, how so lovely. Yeah. That is wonderful. Yeah. I mean, it is sort of, we talk about it a lot because it is sort of it's lovely to be in a family. You know, we're lucky to be in a family and have these children and you know, yeah, so the age gap with me was a shock at first. And when I hear you say so 3 years, I was like, oh yeah, maybe that's the way to do it. Leave 3 years because then
But I think however the cards fall, you just feel like, well, that's how it was always going to be.
Of course.
I think I probably did it because my mum had my brother and sister 3 years apart. So my head was like, 3 years, that sounds good.
Of course, yeah.
The
of course.
First two are 5 years apart. There's quite a big gap between the top two.
We inherit so much, don't we, in that mindset. So even with the sickness, I sort of knew I was like, oh yeah, my mum's talked about morning sickness. Oh, now I've got morning sickness. Of course I have. Well, of course it is actually, you can actually inherit a morning. I think it is a hereditary thing. But yeah, you're right saying that. That was in your family, that dynamic. So it seemed quite...
Yeah. So you sometimes go to the things that feel a bit comforting. But yeah, you've spoken a lot about expectation. And I did wonder, are you the sort of mother that you thought you would be?
Gosh. Do you know what? I actually cannot remember what I thought I'd be as a mother.
Mm.
I don't know if you... Like, I had no... I suppose there are moments where I think, oh, yeah, this... So what you're saying, the expectation, it is... Like, there are moments where I think... Oh yeah, I've really got this down. I'm managing to do this and I'm not losing my cool. That's good. Not many moments, but there are moments. And but I suppose I never quite nothing prepares you for the feeling of being responsible for those precious little people. Like I think I don't think I imagined that I had that much love in me, honestly. But I have to try and be more relaxed because I can get kind of fraught around like a loss of control of tidiness, for example, or a feeling of the day. Well, my husband and I had this exact conversation the other day. I went to a hotel for my birthday with the children and our dog. So my husband took us all to a hotel and I had been calling it a holiday. It was one night and I was like, it's a holiday and the kids, we're going on a holiday, you know, 24 hours holiday, whatever. And of course, about 2 hours in, my husband and I were saying, holidays shouldn't be called holidays. They should be called challenges. Do you want to take a challenge? Yes, we want to take a challenge. We're ready for a challenge. That literally, my expectation was probably... My expectations are still not, you know, reality is, it's always different. You know, it's always different. Every day something happens that I didn't expect, or the idea of, in this example, the overnight stay somewhere being called a holiday. It was just a really intense time in a different place than our home. And we felt
that's
really...
such a good way of summing up a family holiday.
Yeah. I mean, and to be honest, we felt so kind of grateful that we're able to do it together and we found somewhere that would accept our big mad dog and that we were able to eat food and I didn't have to wash the dishes after. But we were entertaining those children more than we were ever, ever entertain them at home. It was like full on like military operation.
Yeah.
We walked from the beach to the hotel. It was like maybe a half an hour walk and both kids were having a tantrum. My husband carried both of them and it was literally sand, rocks, mud, rain, sunshine. And I was going like, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Like we were like walking, like kind of like we were on. And I said, I bet every parent has this walk where the walk there is good. The walk back is not so good.
Oh, my, so many times.
So, yeah, I think the expectation, my expectations are always, I'm moving the goalposts every day. So it's never what I expect.
Yes, I think that sums up a lot of the family holiday thing. Sometimes you think, if I was really going to do this properly, I'd have like loads of people taking care of everything.
A community.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Going on holiday and it's like, oh golly, why have I packed so much stuff? I've got to wash everything, you know, sort everything, get used to a new home, get the kids to try and sleep in a different bed with different lighting, and I haven't brought their audio CDs or whatever they're expecting for. It's like, oh my God. Exhausted.
We came home. We started on our journey. It was only a 2-hour drive from where we live. We'd gone down the road and we were already turning back round to go and get a Spider-Man costume that had been forgotten.
Well, to be fair, that is kind of crucial.
It is crucial, yeah.
That was just for you.
Yes, that was.
Oh, it's so nice to talk to you. I know you have to go. Me and too. I hope your dog is okay.
Oh, yes, yes. We've got a lot of animals, Sophie.
How many animals do you have?
We've got 2 dogs. We've got 8 cats. We've got 5 chickens. Well, one of our cats gave birth, and because we decided we wanted to keep all 6 of the kittens, we've now got 6 kittens, but they're not tiny anymore.
Wow.
they're all over the place.
That is a lot of cats.
Yes, it is a lot of cats.
I've got 3 and it feels like a lot.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I thought three would have been fine for us, but I was even thinking, you know, maybe we could stretch to 4. But of course we're mad and we fell in love with all of them. Yeah. So that was it.
It's hard to turn away a kitten.
And also, how do you split them up? That 2 of them were absolutely sure are twins. They're identical and we think they might have been born in the same sack. And we're not sure if that was the case, but they were together and the others were all separate. They were born overnight, so we didn't see the birth, but we came down and they'd just been born. But we just love them all, and we couldn't separate them from each other or us.
I bet the kids love having all the animals around.
They do. Yeah. It does a lot for our family energy, the feeling of like love and nurture. Our old Mabel, our 4.5-year-old, now wants to be a vet, and she's, you know, so. But yeah, so we also have to deal with all the other things that come with this, having that many animals. So yeah,
we're at the other end of the scale here. My oldest cat, he keeps getting handed into the vet because people see him on the streets and think he's a stray that's dying. He just looks pretty terrible at the moment.
But he's still going.
He is. I have to get him. The vet suggested I get a collar that says I'm unwell, but I felt like that was a bit disrespectful for Kaneki. So I'm just getting him one that says I've been microchipped, so that people just know he has a home.
Or I have a home. I'm loved.
Leave me alone, I'm local.
We
live around the corner from the vet, so it's like literally like our house and the vet, there's just one road in the middle. Like, just let him come home. I have to keep going picking him up from the vet.
Just leave him be, for goodness sake.
I know. That was my chat with Laura, and we spoke about that shift in emphasis that can happen after you're a parent and where you find your joy. Or maybe it's just getting older. Yeah, I think it's actually probably more that. I think the things that brought me joy have always been the same. I think I'm just not probably better at admitting it now. I think today I found joy with Jessie. We've been making these little dioramas out of old boxes, and actually I've always quite liked doing crafty things with the kids. I like how bossy they are and how they just assume there is always a way to get things done, even if you're saying, I'm not sure how to do that. It kind of brings out the problem solver in me. Oh, that's sweet. As I'm talking to you, I see Ray, who's 9, pretending to hit 5-year-old Jessie on the head. That's great. Well, why is it that siblings don't get on with each other better? I don't get it. and I had recorded another outro for you where I spoke about how excited I was to be going away for festivals. But we've had some dramatic developments around our house recently where a couple of the kids have tested positive for COVID. And as I speak, they are not too ill. There's a couple of fevers and some sore tummies. But I think if we weren't living in these times, I don't know if I really would have thought much of it. But I've been, trying to be prudent so that I do the right thing. And as soon as you see the little positive thing on the test strip, you're like, oh no. So yes, Richard and I and all our equipment and all the things we'd planned and all our crew and band, everybody had to step down. I had 3 festivals this weekend. 2 of them were headline shows, some stuff to do next week.
all gone. But hey, I'm sure there'll be some little crafting activities that Jessie and I can get up to. And if that's as bad as it gets, it's not too bad, I suppose. And actually, thinking it over the last 16 months, we've actually been able to do a lot of things without having to cancel them last minute. So mainly, there's reasons to be grateful. And on that note, I will bid you adieu. I've got two people lined up for next week, and I can only choose one because it's the end of the series. So, what do I go for? You will find out next week, but they're both brilliant. And then I've got a whole host of lovely people already signed up and ready to get on with the chats for the next series. I can't believe we've got through another series already. What a lovely thing. Thanks as ever to my guest. Thanks as ever to you. And I hope you're having a peaceful time of it wherever you are in this summer holiday. It's quite a weird one, isn't it? It is. But hey, we're doing all right. All right. Lots and lots of love to you. Speak to you soon. See you soon.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.